AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. We've got coverage of today's Top Producer Summit coming your way. We're going to get to know the finalists for the Top Producer of the Year Award. But first, we've got to talk about a wheat-led rally in grains and another disruption to the livestock markets.
Live from the latest round of exciting new challenges via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we continue coverage from the Top Producer Summit with Bill Kame and Zach Ducheneau. Then we'll talk with Scott and Eric Henry from Longview Farms. And right after the news, an extended remix from Varsity Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right. Thank you so much, Davis. Yeah, we're going to find out what's going on in these markets from Joe, who is actually at Top Producer Summit in Nashville, Tennessee, which I guess is proving that if you're going to be there, you got to live there. Pretty much.
Because sounds like something a football coach maybe once told you. You're going to get there, you got to live there, boy.
Oh, shoot. I wish we were there and having the conversation face-to-face with Joe and many others, but unfortunately the weather got in the way. It got in the way again today. Yeah, John Harith, the Farm Journal news director, was going to be in Nashville today, but the weather and some traffic issues heading in, he was going to make his way from Louisville and couldn't get it done. Turned around, heading back as soon as he can anyway. So still looking to fix a lot of issues in the South and the Southeast. And those cold temperatures across the plains, down into Texas, people are dealing with issues that are just completely foreign to them. Mm-hmm. And the planning of the energy supply has gotten away from them. There's rolling blackouts. Some people have been without power, Davis, for 30 hours, for 30 hours, and temperatures aren't expected to get above freezing until Friday.
Well, now, I saw a map of those blackouts, too, and if that map is to believe, it extends from the Canadian border all the way down to Texas through some of the Midwestern states, which we might, you know, we can get awful high and mighty and say, oh, well, our infrastructure is prepared for this. No, I think there's people in Iowa without power right now, too.
There's a few. It's not as widespread as it is in Texas. I mean, they've got they've got like 4 million or 6 million. I can't remember what the number is right now, but it's millions of people without power. It's crazy. It's having an impact on some of the transportation issues and the packing plants. And oh, what a mess we got going. All right, man, let's do it. Let's get to the news.
Well, Chip, record cold temperatures in the U.S. southern plains and frigid conditions in the eastern Corn Belt and southeast likely caused some winter kill on the hard red and soft red winter wheat crops. Supply side scares for the wheat market are typically short-lived, especially when the supply scare is winter kill that is weeks from being confirmed. Yeah. Wheat export inspections in the weekend of February 4 totaled more than 392,000 metric tons. That lined up with trade expectations. Wheat shipments are now 1.8% behind the year-ago pace. USDA has 2020 and 21 wheat exports up 2.1% from year earlier. July hard red winter wheat 19.5 cents higher, 6.45 1/4. July soft red jumped 16.75 cents to 6.46 3/4. September spring wheat 14.5 cents higher, 6.55 3/4. Chip.
All right. Yeah, the thing about winter kill as a market factor is you do have to wait at this point. We're going to have to wait at least 3, maybe 4 weeks before we see if the wheat crop does anything at all. And it's going to be a delayed reaction here on this thing. It's probably going to be a short-lived event here.
Well, corn export inspections for the weekend at February 4 were in line with trade expectations, totaling more than 1.32 million metric tons. Corn export shipments are now 83.9% ahead of year ago, while USDA estimates corn exports this year will increase 43.4% from last year. That's adding to ideas that USDA will, at some point, increase the export estimate and lower the carryover estimate. The close back on top of 550 in March futures puts the contract back at the midpoint of the February trading range. March corn futures 13.5 cents higher at 552.25. May corn up 13.25 cents, 549.75. December corn closed at 457.75, up 9 cents on the day. Chip.
Yeah, the movement on that balance sheet, the increase in the exports, the decrease in the carryover, it would have been nice to see some of that in the February update. Instead, probably going to have to wait until March 9. Also, we get the we've got the USDA Ag Outlook Forum at the end of this week. That should provide some direction for the corn market here at the end of the week.
Soybean export inspections fell short of trade expectations and totaled nearly 810,000 metric tons. Inspections in 2020 and 21 are now 77.2% ahead of year ago. That compares to expectations that exports will expand by 32.6% this year. Soybean harvest in Brazil is 9% complete compared to the five-year average harvest pace of 20% done by February 11. The slow pace is holding open the window for U.S. exports and delaying the planting of the Safrina corn crop. March soybeans 12.75 cents higher, 13.84 3/4. May beans up 14.5 cents, 13.85 3/4. Novi beans closed at 11.85 3/4, up 12.75 on the day. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. There are some shipping issues on soybeans that are going to create some issues in the cash market as well before everything is said and done and we get back to some warmer temperatures. Let's bring in Joe Vaklavic here real quick. Joe's with Standard Grain. How you doing there, buddy?
I'm doing good. We miss you here in Tennessee, Chip.
Yeah, well, I miss being in Tennessee. No question
no,
about it.
No, you're not missing it. It's terrible. The weather here is terrible. It's a terrible place to be right now.
Well, the impact that it's having on these energy markets, Joe, the disruptions in the cash energy markets in particular are absolutely crazy, aren't they?
Yeah, they're really crazy, but they are temporary. I mean, this cold snap will end eventually. And whether that's later this week, I think that's kind of what the forecast suggests. It's a mess. I don't know what impact it has on the ag markets. I mean, I guess the wheat and the winter kill issue that you mentioned is certainly cause for concern. But I just don't know that you can kill the winter wheat crop here in mid-February.
Right.
We'll know a month from now, I guess.
Yep. Some of the packing plants are going through some temporary shutdowns because they're diverting natural gas to the higher need areas, I guess. It seems pretty crazy what's going on. Good start to the week for the grains, though, Joe.
Yeah, it's a really impressive performance. I mean, overall in the row crops, we've been kind of in what I would call a consolidation pattern, really. I mean, we haven't made new highs, but we haven't broken out to the downside. We're trading wider ranges, which is, you know, to be expected when you're at elevated prices like this. But it's almost like we're waiting for the next, whatever that next piece of news is, whether it's the acreage report or USDA to confirm these larger exports, or maybe we want to see more shipments. I don't know, but you know, grand scheme of things, they're holding together awfully well, and this rally has sustained itself for such a long time.
Okay. All right. Now, Joe's going to stick around. We're going to continue the conversation with Joe in the next segment. He's getting ready to present to the attendees of the Top Producer Summit down in Nashville. Going to find out, get a preview of what Joe's going to be telling them, and hey, we can build on this conversation that we just started. What directions are these markets going? What should you do about it? We've got Joe Vaklavic, Standard Grain, coming up next right here on AgriTalk. Hey, everybody, Chip Flora here. I've got a great deal for you to tap into all the information at the 2021 Top Producer Summit. You don't have to travel. It's all online, and I'll pick up half the tab. That's right, because you listen to AgriTalk, Top Producer is working with us to take your fee from $150 down to $75. Use promo code AgriTalk when you register at tpsummit.com. It's a half-price deal only for AgriTalk listeners. Use promo code AgriTalk at tpsummit.com.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, and our coverage of the events in Nashville, Tennessee at Top Producer Summit. Thank you so much to Clifton Larson Allen for making it possible for us to bring you that coverage. Davis, let's go ahead and wrap up the news before we get back to the conversation with Joe.
Well, you may recall those gains in corn and soybean prices. They spilled over to the cotton market as growers are making final decisions on the 2021 crop mix. March cotton was 85 points higher at 88.12. December cotton up 92 points to close at 84.81. And on the cattle side, slaughter disruptions are threatening to back up some market-ready cattle, causing some temporary plant shutdowns that weighed on front-month prices, with February live cattle down 105, 116.15. April cattle rallied 62.5 cents, 125.80. March feeders 7.5 cents lower, 140.77.5. And finally, April lean hogs 97.5 cents higher, 86.17.5. June hogs 97.5 higher, 92.87.5. Chip.
All right, thank you very much. Let's get Joe Vaclavec back in here. Standard Grain. Joe, I've been telling people if they want to see what a really strong market looks like right now, take a look at what's going on in that April hog contract. I mean, the April hogs today, almost a buck higher. They didn't come close to testing resistance at Friday's high, and they closed off session highs again today, just above the opening range. I mean, it's an inside day on the daily chart for April lean hogs, and the close was close to the open. I mean, it's quite an impressive move that we're seeing in hogs.
Yeah, the hog market's been impressive. I've been so busy running around giving speeches and doing this stuff, I didn't have time to take a look at the commitment of traders report on hogs. I know that in cattle, we're starting to see money managers come into the long side of the market. And I would imagine, based on the price action, that it's probably the same in the hogs. And it's kind of something that I think we've talked about here on the show, that, you know, we haven't seen a whole lot of that. And we're just starting to see it now over the last couple of weeks. I think that in live cattle, I think that money managers or the funds, I think they like doubled their position in terms of length over the course of the last 2 or 3 weeks. And they're not in extreme territory yet. They're maybe on their way there. But this is kind of something I was hoping would happen. And it looks like maybe we're starting to see some of that. We know there's a lot of money out there. There's no interest rate. Yeah. There's a lot of dollars that need a home.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And the fund interest, managed money interest in hogs is on the way up. I don't remember what the numbers are, just that it is expanding. And yeah, it's going to provide guys with an opportunity to lock in some profits. It feels like it anyway, both cattle and hogs. Figuring out when to pull the trigger on that risk management move is what is going to be difficult going forward.
Well, that's the tricky thing with marketing any commodity, whether it's corn, soybeans, wheat, cattle, hogs. You know, there's always a problem when there's no profitability available. But I think that a whole separate set of problems arrives when you get to profitable levels and you can turn a profit and you're able to lock it in. The question now is, okay, when do I lock it in? I want to lock it in, but not leave a whole lot on the table. I don't want to miss the big up move, you know, if the market's to rally further. So the moral of the story is that marketing commodities is never easy in any sort of market, whether it's bull market, bear market, whatever. They all present their own sets of issues.
Right, right. And then you got to figure out what's going on in the cash markets. And The
it's
issues are definitely there.
I mean, if you had to take one set of problems, you obviously take the one where you're making money. But
right.
it still does present a set of problems. There's never anything that's crystal clear or black and white in this stuff.
Right, and when we're at profitable levels, it's FOMO, the fear of missing out on even more profit potential later, that kind of kicks in, and that can influence the marketing tool that producers choose, and. Maybe we should be building some flexibility into those marketing plans that would allow you to participate in a further rally. I don't know, Joe. The livestock markets are getting to a point that maybe you ought to just be satisfied with the price that we're getting and see where we go from there. Go ahead. Go ahead, Joe.
No. That was fine. Here at the meeting, as a matter of fact, so I'm going to give a speech here in an hour and a half or something. And what I've done recently, probably the last 5 or 6 years, I've really kind of shifted the way that I do my speeches. And I do a lot of speeches for different farm groups this time of year. But what I've really started to focus on more than like – more than market outlook type stuff, like running through USDA balance sheets. You know, farmers hear that from a lot of different places all year. I feel like they don't need to hear it from me. I try to run through a lot of things related to the mental side of grain marketing, some best practices in grain marketing, things that can apply not just to this year, but to any year, just ways that any given farmer out there can improve. And I kind of base it on my experience in grain marketing. Gosh, I've been doing this my entire adult life now, and it feels like an eternity, but I'm not even old at all. But, it's just like, I've learned a lot. I've seen a lot, and I try to like share what I've learned, over the years in these speeches, and it seems to, they seem to go over pretty well, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when I've was out on the road doing a lot of speaking as well, Joe, I always wanted to bring something different to the conversation. And I started talking about the decision-making process that you go through in pulling the trigger on a risk management strategy. It's that kind of stuff that people will go home with and remember because it was different. It added to the conversation. It didn't just pile on facts and figures. Add to the conversation is what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, and you know, facts and figures are great and they're relevant, but they can also sometimes steer you in the right direction. One of the things I'm going to talk about today is USDA and how in a lot of situations they'll kind of lead you astray and could actually lead you to some bad decisions. You know, you go back to last spring, for example, when we had this projection for this massive carryout and just this horribly negative situation. I mean, that was essentially when the lows were printed in the markets, right?
Yeah.
Was around the time that those projections were happening. So things along those lines, like that's just one example of some of the things I'm going to talk about today is how, you know, USDA and their projections are just that, they're projections. They can be wrong just like anybody else's projections.
Exactly. Yep. Got to base the decisions on what you know and well, how prices and revenue potential lines up with your cost of production on how aggressive you're going to be. Is knowing your cost of production overvalued by some in this whole decision making process, Joe?
No, it's not overvalued. It's I think the most important tool that there is in grain marketing.
Okay.
But
cool.
It's not the only tool, because when you get into these markets where, like, okay, we've now far exceeded levels that allow for profitability, right? We're way past that. Like, how do you market in a market like this? You can't do it just based off of profitability, because it would lead you to a lot of like really early bad looking sales. So it's still the best tool. It's still the most important thing to be aware of. But there are other tools also that you should be aware of, I think.
Gotcha. Okay. We talked just very briefly about the start of the week in the grain markets in the last segment, Joe. What are you watching going forward? We've got the USDA Ag Outlook Forum at the end of the week. You know, we've got some acreage estimates that we'll get from USDA, I guess. Anything that you're willing to say, listen, this is what we've got to keep an eye on?
I really think the narrative, the conversation, the attention is going to very much focus toward the new crop situation. In a year like this, where we've had a short crop in corn and a short crop in soybeans 2 years in a row in the U.S., and that's a big part of the reason why the markets are at where they're at. We have that combined with this big surge in export demand, right? So going into a year like this, where we know that we're going to plant big acres of both crops, it seems to me that the risk in both directions is perhaps elevated. If you were to run into a third year of a short crop in corn or soybeans, third consecutive year, I mean, it would really open up to the upside to levels that people probably don't think are possible. But at the same time, if we plant 96 million acres of corn and average 180 nationally, I mean, you could be at prices that are way overvalued. I think that there's a lot of risk going into a year where we know that these big acres, that we're going to at least attempt to plant these big acres, weather allowing, of course.
Right. Anything that you feel like they need to be considering to do right now on the 2021 crops to avoid some of that risk?
Well, you've got to be looking at your crop insurance situation already.
Okay.
The level of revenues that that you can protect this year are in all likelihood going to be the best that you've seen in 6 or 7 years, probably, at least. So that's where you kind of have to start looking at it now. It looks like we're going to average somewhere around that 450 or north of there for corn, somewhere around 1160 or better than that in beans, depending on how the next, I think, 8 trading days play out. But that's where you start, and then, you know, start looking at your numbers. I know that production, of course, is the big wild card, but that crop insurance deal, I think, is a big deal this year.
Yeah, certainly is. Joe, have fun down there. Say hi to everybody.
Will do. Thanks, Chip.
You bet. That's Joe Vaclavic, Standard Grain. Okay, when we come back, we are going to get to know a couple of the Top Producer of the Year award finalists. We've got Kame Farms and DX Beef up next right here on AgriTalk. Hey, everybody, Chip Flory here. I've got a great deal for you to tap into all the information at the 2021 Top Producer Summit. You don't have to travel. It's all online, and I'll pick up half the tab. That's right, because you listen to AgriTalk, Top Producer is working with us to take your fee from $150 down to $75. Use promo code AgriTalk when you register at tpsummit.com. It's a half-price deal only for AgriTalk listeners. Use promo code AgriTalk at tpsummit.com. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Temperatures dive in the plains. The entire state of Texas has been placed under a disaster declaration. Brazil's soybean harvest and Safrina corn planting still well behind normal. Weather-related delays concerning, but crop consultant Dr. Michael Cordonier says the course on Brazilian crop projections. Transportation snarls near the transshipment station in Brazil. Thousands of trucks loaded with grains for export are stranded along this road. Another historic NOPA crush expected for January. Egypt has hiked its soybean imports, relying heavily on the U.S. And you've heard this one before. The U.S. is running out of legal borrowing authority. All right, give Pro Farmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
David. All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us. We are bringing you coverage from the Top Producer Summit in Nashville. And speaking of that, let's go ahead and make time for this industry spotlight. And joining us now is Paul Niefer, Clifton Larson Allen. Thank you so much to CLA for making it possible for AgriTalk to bring you coverage from Top Producer Summit down in Nashville, Tennessee. Paul, neither of us made it down to Nashville, but we're still bringing coverage from the Top Producer Summit. We really appreciate it. Yeah, Longview Farms won the Top Producer of the Year Award. Succession planning is so important for Longview. How can CLA help with that?
Yeah, and that's one of the key things or the key services that we provide is that succession planning, including the estate planning, but also on the side where you're trying to transfer that operation onto the next generation. What many farm operations find out is there's extra tax liabilities associated with that transfer. So we are able to go in there and help them mitigate that. We probably can't eliminate the tax liability, but we can certainly mitigate that liability and help them get it onto the next generation in an efficient manner.
Excellent. Okay, some of these larger farms that are at Top Producer, they have a need for a part-time CFO. Is that something that CLA can provide too?
Yes, and that's actually probably our fastest growing service that we provide for farmers and other businesses out there is a part-time CFO. You need some type of higher level, but you can't afford a full-time CFO. So we are actually able to go in there and set up the book or help you set up the books to provide that needed information that really helps you run your operation more profitably and so on at a very reduced cost.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much, Paul. That is Paul Niefer from Clifton Larson Allen. He is at FarmCPA on Twitter and blogs for us on AgWeb. Thanks, Paul.
You're welcome.
Yeah, good sponsors. CLA, Clifton Larson Allen. We appreciate everything that they're doing for us. Okay, let's get to know one of the finalists of the Top Producer of the Year Award out in Salina, Kansas. We've got Bill Kame on the line with us with Kame Farms. Bill, first off, congratulations. Second off, welcome to AgriTalk. How you doing?
Doing good. Thank you, Chip.
Good. Yeah, it was really fun watching. Well, I wish I would have been there live, of course, Bill, but it was fun watching the event last night. Sarah said it, and all three of the finalists said that it's an honor to be considered and to be a finalist. But what does it mean to you? What did this mean to you to be a finalist for the Top Producer of the Year Award?
Well, yeah, it was a large honor. I'd have never guessed we'd be ever asked to do this, and it was something I've read about these guys in Top Producer magazine for years, and have always been impressed by these operations, and so yeah. To me it was a big honor.
All right, Bill, tell us about your farm. Tell us about your family.
Okay. My farm is owned by me, my mom, and my sister, and I have two boys coming back to the farm, or are back at the farm already, and I've got one nephew back at the farm, and two more that will be joining shortly.
From watching the video about your operation, your family means so much to you and to the business, and just, it's why you're doing it, isn't it?
It is. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They're important to the operation, to me. We've been doing this for a long time and want to see it continue.
Right. Absolutely. So tell us what set Kame Farms apart, or what sets Kame Farms apart from some of the other operations. Is it the way that you do things? Is it your business structure? Is it what you're doing? What are you producing out there?
So we're growing wheat, milo, corn, soybeans, alfalfa. We have a set rotation. I think that's maybe something a little different than a lot of guys in our area. And we're 100% no-till. And I also think that, our business structure has helped us, get to where we are today.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell us about your markets, the markets that you've got available to you, and the cash side of things out there, Bill. What are you producing specifically for?
So, we are growing some seed wheat for a seed distributor. We've been doing a little bit of high protein wheat, and then most of the rest of our crops are just basically commodity crops.
Gotcha. All right. Why go through the nomination process of Top Producer of the Year, Bill? I what did you learn from the process?
It was really interesting. It made me look back. I hadn't taken time to really reflect on what we've done, and that was when we went back and looked at stuff, it was just kind of neat to see where we had been and how far we'd come, and that was one of the best things out of the whole experience, I think. I've got to meet a lot of interesting people, and talk to several of the professionals and that judge the competition, and I've learned a lot.
Yeah. All right. What about your marketing? What do you rely on most when it comes to your marketing, Bill? Just general information, or do you have somebody that you go to?
I do have a commodity broker or a commodity advisor, and I use a lot of his information. We base a lot of our decisions off of our profitability on our farm. So Gotcha. You know, we know where our break-evens are. We know what profit margin we want to achieve. And we tend to be fairly aggressive at trying to hit those levels and not always worried about hitting the high, but making sure we're hitting our profit targets is what we're after.
Gotcha, Bill. It's good to get to know you. Stay on the line. I want to get to know Kelsey a little bit here. Kelsey Ducheneau, Gettysburg, South Dakota. Is that right, Kelsey?
Yep, that is where we get our mail.
That doesn't mean that you live close to Gettysburg, but that's where you get the mail. I love it. Congratulations on being a finalist, Kelsey.
Oh, thank you so much. It truly is a humbling honor.
Right. Let's start off by hearing about your operation, your farm, your ranch.
You bet. So I am the fourth generation on a cow-calf ranching operation in South Dakota. We operate on the Cheyenne River Sioux Indian Reservation, which is in the north central part, right there on the Missouri River. Me and my father started back in 2019, really trying to expand our focus in our operation to get more into that value-added agriculture which allowed us to not feel so stressed to meet profit margins on the commodity scale, but then to look internally and say, okay, what issues are we having internally? Where are we losing money? What can we do to refine that? How can we add value and support the efforts of the improving the resource that we're working with so that we can be even more regenerative by practice?
Yeah. I love the comment that you made in the video about how you're looking to take care of the livestock underground as much as the livestock above ground.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you ask my little brother who was at the banquet last night, he would tell you that I'm a soil nerd, a plant nerd. but I come by that term very proudly. I love the concept of what's going on underneath the ground. What is our soil trying to tell us? And how can we be better land stewards by shifting our practices to promote the regeneration of that soil resource?
Right. Your dad, Zach, in the video said something about, you know, when you run the calves through the sale barns, through the sale ring, it depends on what kind of a mood the buyers are in. And you decided to find a way to get away from that and increase the value. Tell us about DX Beef.
You bet. So DX Beef is a grass finish beef, direct-to-consumer beef business. We started simply because we had a couple of local families that were wanting to buy local beef. And we said, well, hey, we got a couple steers that we kept back. Let us go ahead and finish them and we'll get them ready for you and we'll sell them to you on a share basis. And the reality is there's not a whole lot of families that can afford or have the space for an entire quarter of beef. So there was really a need to meet the demand for, you know, small 5, 10, 15 pound size sales of beef. We were able to work with Brock's Butcher Block in Oneida to get state inspected with our beef, which then allowed us to do individual by the pound resale for our meat. We have partnered with local cafes like You Betcha Watecha to be able to, they're sourcing our grass finished product as well. So we're just truly blessed to have an opportunity to, you know, care for the land in a way, and our customers are caring for us in a way that allows us to focus primarily on the land.
Fantastic. You guys, again, congratulations. Your stories are fantastic. Everybody, you can go to agweb.com and see their stories and read their stories there. Really cool stuff. Bill, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You bet. That's Bill Kaye, Mount Salina, Kansas, and Kelsey Ducheneau there, Gettysburg, South Dakota. Thanks, Kelsey.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
All right. Henry Boy's next.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. We are continuing our coverage of the Top Producer Summit. And one of the highlights every year is the Top Producer of the Year Award. We've already talked with finalist Bill Kaye, Kelsey Ducheneau. And it's time to talk to the guys from Longview Farms, Nevada, Iowa. And not only were they a finalist, they were awarded Top Producer of the Year, Eric Henry and Scott Henry. Eric, welcome to AgriTalk. How you doing?
Doing well. Glad to be with you.
Glad that you're here. And Scott Henry as well. Scott, welcome.
Good to talk to you, Chip.
You bet. And, of course, you guys, there are a couple of people that are not on the line with us that couldn't be with us this afternoon. That is Steve and Lori Henry, your folks. I've known Steve for many, many years, you guys. I've seen your operation grow. I've kind of watched it happen before my eyes. I've seen you guys grow up. It feels like this is, it's not just the Top Producer of the Year award for you guys. This is the culmination of a lot of hard work by Steve and Lori. Isn't it, Scott?
Very much so. We're incredibly humbled and blessed to be a part of the family that we are. And I think Eric put it best last night, actually, that, you know, we're here standing on the shoulders of many generations of the Henry family and our great grandpa Long. It's a humbling experience for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. What I got to know, what was Steve's reaction here, Eric, when he got the news last night?
Oh, you know, I think he was pretty excited. And I think he's just a humble guy in general, but
yeah.
He's pretty proud to be able to just show our family's legacy of investing in the next generation. And just it's fun to see the rewards of that and being recognized by your peers. I think he was feeling pretty special and just humbled.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the neat things about Steve, and the reason that, honestly, you guys, the reason I got to know Steve is because he came to farming through the banking side, through the finance side. He was a farm banker out in Nebraska for a period of time before he came back to the farm in Nevada there. What was it like? Was it 88, 89 that he came back to the farm?
Yes. Farm for about 6 years with my grandpa prior to my grandpa retiring. But came back in 88.
Yeah, very good. Very good. And basically started planning for the future and looking forward to a day when maybe you guys would be able to join him on the farm. Tell us about the operation today, Eric, because it is unique in that you're spreading some costs out there as pretty effectively, aren't you?
Yeah, so we'd be in central Iowa operating around 10,000 acres of corn and soybeans, but with a large focus on seed corn production, and then recently gotten into contract finishing hogs and then custom cattle feeding as well.
Yeah. The livestock side of things, Scott, I didn't know if I would ever see Henry Longview Farms with livestock operation.
I think it's a product of the next generation is what my dad would tell you, Chip. We were looking at doing all of that and said, hey, do you want to join us? And he said, no, I think this can be your guys' thing. And so Eric and our brother Kyle and I are all pretty excited to team up together and do something separate of mom and dad as well. And so it's been a learning experience, but a rewarding one as well.
Yep. Planning for the future is something that Steve and Lori have always had have always been very focused on that. To the point that, yeah, they're still in the operation, but they're not the ones making the final decisions any longer, are they, Scott?
You know, they've been so purposeful for many years, but really the last 5 years to give Eric and I the opportunity to sink or swim and to do that with our own equity in the game. And so it's been an honor for Eric and I know, just to have parents that are supportive with the foresight that they've had, and then ultimately the commitment to actually do it. And so we've really been blessed.
Yeah. Well, and the faith to do it, to take the leap, Eric. I mean, the succession planning that Steve and Lori have done, they could write a book on it now, couldn't they?
you know, it's something I've always admired about my dad is just how he seeks the input of others. And if there's something to read on a certain topic, he'll go out and find the book and he'll start reading about it. So yeah, just like Scott said, he's very purposeful, and we've just been very lucky as a family to find a lot of great advisors that have surrounded our family and our operation as we've kind of begun and are going through this transition of leadership and equity.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that where the name came from? Longview Farms, taking a long view of the operation.
We really, it ties in nice. One of the things that as a family, we always smile when we hear the name is our great grandpa Long, Kenneth right. A. Long actually was the first generation. And so it's a name that allows us to encompass both the heritage element, but also truly just the mission that we have as a family in this industry.
Yeah, it's excellent. What's next for Longview, Eric?
You know, I think we're digesting the livestock side of things a little bit right now, but no, I think Scott and I are just really looking forward to continuing to grow the operation, and we've enjoyed diversifying. So I'm sure that will potentially be a play we continue to use in the future. But it's just a lot of fun to be farming right now with a brother, but with two parents that are very supportive and some awesome grandparents as well that are always watching out for us and encouraging us to do our best.
Yeah. Well, it's an absolutely fantastic choice. It is a good choice for Longview Farms to be selected top producer of the year for 2021. Congratulations again, you guys.
Thank you.
Really,
you bet. That is Eric Henry and Scott Henry, Longview Farms. Wow. Really, really cool. I'm overjoyed for the Henry family and Longview Farms, winners of the Top Producer of the Year award. Thanks for listening this afternoon. Tomorrow morning, we got a Farmer Forum. Tomorrow afternoon, Luke Swenson from the Money Farm.